I just wanted to again thank two Joys and one Barbara for putting on this wonderful opportunity to share with you. I'm Zan, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Again, delighted to be here. How long am I speaking for?
You have 15 to 20 minutes, Zan.
Okay, great. I would love it if someone could just give me a heads up when I have when I hit 15.
Barbara, would you do that, please?
Okay, is that a yes? Because I'll set my own timer. Okay. I'm Zan, I'm a compulsive overeater, and if nothing else I say resonates, I brought two props to show you what I believe in. One of them is my big book, and one of them is a clipboard. I'm very proud of my big book. I have to say, I know pride is a character defect that leads the list, but it's a bazillion years old. And I'm a baby compared to some people, and certainly my dearest, closest friends in a way. I'm the baby among them. But you know, look, if I'm going to get older, I might as well brag about something. And so this is a big book that's falling apart that was purchased in 1976. And I like to, you know, to kid that I came into the program before women had the right to vote. And this is my textbook. And I'm so grateful to particularly the OA members when I came in who were AA members as well and had just that dead set belief in the AA program and would get up at our maintainers meeting back then and raise this book and say, this is our textbook. And I feel like, you know, brimstone and fire preacher, but I believe it and I love it. And I've grown, you know, in other ways and I've read many other books and stuff, but this is it for me. So that's my textbook. And then this one, because I was at a meeting this morning and we passed around the We Care list. So that's what this represents. And, you know, this is what I was taught among so many other wonderful things, but that, you know, my solution is to call the newcomer. So I have my list right here. I took four or five newcomers' names last Sunday off the list, and nothing so much helps my depression and my self-obsession as getting out of myself and calling others. And yes, I've used that to an extreme. Yes, I've run away from my feelings and not faced them. Yes, I've done that instead of meditating perhaps, but you know, just for today, I don't care. This saved my life. And of course, I love to think, you know, that when Bill Wilson got sober, that was not the beginning of AA. It was when he helped Dr. Bob get sober. And so if I'm not helping another, you know, then, anyway, just put it this way. I love it and I'm grateful. I'm thinking of two major changes that happened to me in this program. And the first one was when I got abstinent. And as Joy so kindly said, it did take me 5 years to get back to back. You know, I started eating when I was about 12 and I was just off to the races. And I'm a garden variety binger, as a sponsor once said. Not a bulimic or anything else. I was just always on a diet and always breaking my diet. And people use the word restricting today. I don't really know what that means, but I think it just means trying not to eat and eating nothing. And I did all kinds of diets, you know, including, I talk about this a lot, but pre-digested liquid protein, which was something in the 1980s, I think, where you literally fasted, you did not eat anything, and you took, you know, like 4 tablespoons a day of what was some sort of refined protein, I guess. And I did, I lost about 20 pounds. My top weight is, I'm maintaining about a 45 pound weight loss, but I was a ballet dancer at the time, which tells you nothing about being a perfectionist or into comparing, you know. Tells you everything. But anyway, so I was a ballet dancer and my teacher told me, I'll get you into a company in Pittsburgh if you lose 20 pounds. So I was actually in OA at this time, and complete self-will run riot. And I went on this pre-digest and I'd lost the weight, but then I spent 4 days in New York and gained it all back. So I went to the audition in Pittsburgh and the teacher took me in her room afterward. And she said, I'm sorry, but we're not running a spa for fat dancers. So anyway, Yeah, you know, that's just to kind of tell you, and this was a life dream. I wanted, you know, I had spent years and years of blood, sweat, and tears wanting to be a ballet dancer, and doesn't matter. Nothing. I have, you know, I'm powerless over food. That's all I really need to say. So anyway, that's to give you a little background. So I was in OA and I just kept, I went back to meetings and kept going, kept coming. And then, and you know, working the hell out of the program, having sponsors, going to meetings, blah, 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 blah. Could not get abstinent. And then one Friday night, I'd had a period of what I would describe as control, where I was having about one binge a month, which was crazy. And by the way, my binges would typically be at least 5 candy bars, you know, half a pizza, a pint of ice cream kind of thing, sugar, salt, right? And just the utter self-hatred, you know, and guilt and misery after doing that. And then of course, always the next morning, I'll never do that again. You know, and just that horrible vicious cycle in OA, right? So I'd had this period of control where it was only once a month. And I thought, well, this isn't so bad. You know, maybe I'm finally over this phase. Because really, you know how they talk about we can have no lurking reservations, that we are really a compulsive overeater? Well, I did. I had serious reservations. And I kept thinking, oh, it was just a phase and I'd grow out of it. You know, once I got the boyfriend, once I got the jeans, once I got happy, once I got the job, and I never grew out of it. I was in this period of control, and which of course then I lost. I started to eat 2 weeks later, 5 days later, and then daily. And I got on that Friday night into a blessed, blessed state of utter fear and panic and vanity. I was afraid I was going to gain weight back that I had lost. And I went to that maintainers meeting the next day, and it was giant, and the people had a sparkle in their eye, and I dearly wanted what they had. And I was pretty much struck abstinent. You know, and why that day was different from any other day, I don't know. I feel like I had tried so hard. And I remember for so many years saying, well, wait, do I try? Because people would say, you got to work a program, you know, so I'd go to more meetings, I'd do more writing, I'd get a tougher sponsor. But then they would say, oh, you got to let go, you got to surrender. So it's like I tried everything, nothing worked. It's so out of my control. And that's the harshest thing to have to say to a newcomer. I can't really even tell you what to do, except to keep putting your body in the rooms where it happens. And now we have a musical to go with her, because that's a line from Hamilton, the room where it happens. And that's the only thing I can really say. But I can say, and I'll start to cry, I'm a big crier, is that, you know, I haven't stopped coming back except for 1 month when I was doing that ballet stuff. I haven't stopped coming back since 1976. And I just owe everything. And I have never been more happy, joyous, and free, or productive, or laughing than I am today. And that's after, you know, over 45 years. So the other really big change, and by the way, from that point forward of getting struck abstinent, I dove in with both feet and went to 7 to 9 meetings a week. Like, I don't know how to tell a newcomer how to do it without going to 9 meetings a week. I just don't, because it's the way I did it. And I was nuts. And I was also really, really afraid of the craving, because when it came on me, I not once could I fight it off. So I was afraid it was going to come back. And I had to put up those roadblocks, you know, like miles in advance, so that I had a chance that it wouldn't come back. And that's why I went to all those meetings and got my butt into service. Service would probably be the third thing, but I don't have a prop for it, you know. And it's when I met Barbara, and, you know, she had, like, I don't know, 2 years of abstinence at the time, and it seemed like an eternity. And, you know, she's one of, you know, a small but incredible group that are dear friends to this day. I'm so grateful. And we would go to a meeting every Wednesday night and eat chicken together beforehand. So some things don't change too much. We had fellowship this morning. So if you're looking for a place to land and a wonderful place to live the rest of your life, you know, that's what I found. So then the other big change. Okay, so life happens, right? I have abstained. continuously since 1981, February 1st. But life happens. And here's the wonderful life that had happened. I've been to incredible trips. I got married to a wonderful man who I'm now divorced from, but continue to be, we're environmentally active and we're co-conspirators in crime together. So that happened. You know, all the friends in the program that I've had, I had an incredible career as a journalist. I still, you know, freelance write. I worked for, okay, I'm just going to name, see, I don't know how to be vague in this program. I worked for Elon Musk for 8 years, and you may hate him. That might be a bragging point, but it was incredibly exciting and abstaining through all of it, you know. So really wonderful things happen, but there were some life events. And starting in about 2012, I would say, well, let me just run it down quickly. Well, for one thing, long before that, I lost my brother to suicide. And that was after his lifelong addiction to hard and heavy drugs. My mother was mentally ill, not big time, but enough that it made a dent, you know. Then I lost my mother. Then I lost my father. Then I got divorced. And then I got breast cancer. And then I lost my career. So I'm the last Dubin standing. And, you know, I just think compound grief can be hard. And that's what happened. Also, if I were going to put my character defects in there, you know, I put a lot of stead in my career. And, you know, could get really wound up. And I have my own business. And so when my clients would disappear, you know, as happens in business highs and business lows, I would get very, very upset. So anyway, all of this happened. And in 2016, when I finally lost my business entirely, I couldn't function anymore. I would try to do a simple task that I had done umpteen times before. And I couldn't do it. It would take me 2.5 hours. It was so bad at the end that I had to hire someone to check my work. And I absolutely crashed and burned. I was also on a lot of, you know, pharmaceuticals prescribed, you know, by a psychiatrist. And I have no judgment on this, but I think that affected me. I had been on antidepressants since the early 90s. So I went to bed. One day, I literally drove home from a meeting and went to bed, and I stayed there for 4 years. The first two were in my bedroom, and I got bored of the scenery. The last two were on a couch right over there that I just replaced. And it was hell. No work. Luckily, I had savings that I lived on. But when I say I did nothing, I mean I did nothing. I went to Trader Joe's once a week. I saw my stepmom once a month for dinner. I was walking a few times a week for 30 minutes in the beginning. At the end, it was maybe 30 minutes once a week. Plus Trader Joe's was the only time I was outside. I could get even more graphic. I have two cats. They had fleas. I didn't care. You know, the fleas were jumping on me. It was, and I didn't, of course, didn't go to a single meeting. Here's probably the best way to describe the devastation. Does anyone here love coffee? I love coffee. I would never give up coffee. I gave up coffee because it entailed moving from that couch to that kitchen. And it was one trip too many. So, and this, of course, trust me, was after inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment twice. The best psychiatrist on the west side of LA, which means you know they're good. Southern California, you know, all therapy for years and years and years. I just crashed. And I think it was compound grief. I do. So here's how I got through that 4 years. And you can imagine the guilt and self-loathing I felt, especially having been somebody extremely active in program and in life. I'm a swing dancer, for God's sake, you know, and a funny person. You can ask any of my friends. So the self-hatred for doing nothing, oh man, would I ever judge somebody who did that? So I got through with Downton Abbey. Sounds ridiculous, but I did have my iPad. And I watched, first I started with The Good Wife and I watched all of those. And then I went to other series and things and finally got on this Facebook group with Downton Abbey and would do that all day long. And we would analyze characters and plots. And the reason I say that is because what that enabled me to do was stay up here in my head without thinking about anything else. And especially the horror that I was inflicting on, not just me, but my loved ones. You know, they were really worried. They didn't see me. And when they did, they saw this gray person who didn't go outside. So that's how I got through. I didn't pick up. And that's the message. So what finally happened was last April, 2020, I said this prayer and I had no relationship with any kind of higher power in those 4 years. None. I had no interest, nothing. But this prayer, it wasn't even, I didn't even really know it was a prayer. I just said this. I said, all right, God, I do not want to change. I know I cannot change and I will not change. And guess what happened? I got up, you know, and I've never said, you know, I had a deepest surrender. And I just have no understanding of how anything works here, except, no, that's not true. I do believe that that's how it works, complete and utter surrender. Can I bring that on? No. Do I know how to bring that on? No. What I do know is how powerless I am. But I do believe that, you know, and it's funny, but because I'm not a traditionally religious person, but I have heard, you know, when I go to religious places or read classically religious things, is that when we make a call and we really say, I am beat, that's when God reaches down. And what I really love is that my higher power is so giant, whatever you call it. Sometimes I call it love. Sometimes I like God because it's short and easy. And I have to say, I do like this sense of a fatherly love. You know, you can tell me that's not right, but I really love that. Something that really cares for me. I had a very loving father. It doesn't always feel paternalistic, but anyway. So what I've heard is that when is that my higher power is bigger than even me telling it, I'm not going to do it. I didn't just say I don't want to. I didn't even say help me. That's the biggest miracle. I did not say help me. I told him I'm not going to change. It's like all bad behavior. And that's what worked for me. And so, like I said, I've never been happier. My work is still up and down. And here is the, one thing I wanted to mention is that I do owe it to OA. I do believe what happened to me was muscle memory. I'm quite sure, because even as I said that prayer, I remember thinking, this is what someone working a program would do. So even though I wasn't in the rooms, I believe that it was so in me. And I, you know how we say it's one day at a time? It is one day at a time. But you know what? I'm glad I went into it with 40 years of program, because I think it's stuck in me. You know, it's like they say, every meeting you go to is a little bank deposit. You know, every time you call a newcomer, it's a bit of a, and I think it helped me. It came back to me. So I totally owe it to OA, totally and completely. And I just love, see, Because I can get really hard on myself with all these thoughts of, well, you're not working it right. And that prayer is a perfect example that I would tell myself, well, God's not going to help you if you say no. And also I get scared with my negative thinking, like, oh, see, here's the thing, though, that's not programmed. You know, there's this whole positive thinking movement out there, which I can't deal with. And I do believe that I really need to cultivate a positive attitude sometimes. But I personally would use that against myself and say, if I'm having negative feelings, I'm doing it wrong. And then that just compounds everything. And this prayer was totally negative thought, you know? And I'll just wrap it up on this. Along those lines, that to me is how I got abstinent, because abstinence is the most important thing in my life today without exception. And I can get all fancy with these kinds of things, but I like to just come back to that, that nothing matters except more than my abstinence. And the change, the turning point for me in this program was as simple as this. When I would have a food thought, you know, because I'd wake up and I'd eat the abstinent breakfast, right? And you'd think that's going to be, you know, for the rest of your life. But by 10 a.m., I'd be thinking of Krispy Kreme, right? And then, but then the self-beating would start. Oh, you're doing it wrong because you're thinking about food. And that's deadly for me. That is the opposite of step one. Step one says, of course you're going to think about food because you're a compulsive overeater. That's okay, hun. You're doing it right. But prior to abstinence, like I would go into a movie theater, smell that popcorn and hold my breath and claim to the universe that I did not want that popcorn. Again, opposite of step one for me, opposite. Then I started to go into a movie theater and take a deep breath and say, hell yes, I want it. And to me, that's the magic. And that's, if I do understand anything about spirituality, and maybe I do, is being the real me and being truthful. And isn't that what this ratty old book says? That the most important thing is to be honest, not to the cash register and not even to the people I make amends to, but to my inner self. I'm a compulsive overeater. But if I can go there and start from there, I have a chance, you know? So I'm so grateful. And I just, you know, I love step one. I don't really understand any of the other steps, but I love step one. So that's where the change can come for me. And thanks again for listening to my drivel and my laughter. Love you all, and thanks for asking.